I'm Bonnie Glaser, Managing Director of the Indo-Pacific Program at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. In a speech delivered in 2014, Chinese leader Xi Jinping said, "Efforts should be made to build our country into a cyber power. Under national strategies like Building Digital China, the Digital Silk Road, and China Standards 2035, Beijing seeks not only the digital transformation of the nation, but also aspires to play a leading role in the global digital order. How should we understand Beijing's ambition to become a cyber superpower and have digital sovereignty? What's China's role in the global digital space today, and how do Chinese digital platforms advance Chinese influence?" To discuss these questions, joining me today is Peter Raymond, a non-resident senior associate with the economics program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Peter has a 30-year career of service at the intersection of the public and private sectors of infrastructure and financial services. And he is the author of a recently released CSIS report entitled "Replatform Planet: Implications of the Rise and Spread of Chinese Platform Technologies." Welcome to the China Global Podcast, Peter.
Thanks very much, Bonnie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. So I want to start with what you think Xi Jinping means when he talks about things like turning China into a cyber superpower or achieving the goal of digital sovereignty. And he once said in a 2018 speech that those who command the internet will win the world. So some people, when they talk about China's ambitions for the international order, they say China's trying to establish a Sino-centric order. Does that make sense in the digital sphere, or do you think that China has a different vision?
Thanks, Bonnie. There's actually a lot in that question. And let me, if I can, start back around 2010, which was when China started to increasingly be vocal about this issue of cyber sovereignty. To the point now today where it has developed and articulated not only an alternative vision for the internet, but also an alternative governance and operating infrastructure of the internet. And this is all tied together in their idea of cyber sovereignty. In this vision or structure, in contrast to the U.S. vision, which is how the internet is organized today and largely operated based on the idea of free flow of information, China has proposed that each country should draw boundaries around its national infrastructure and control the information that flows between the international environment and the national environment and control the exchange of information within a national boundary. And so this is obviously very akin to how China operates its internet today. There are very limited points of access to the international internet, if you will, and there's a large degree of control within China around what transpires on their internet. China's also talked about the internationalization of internet governance. And let me just take a moment to explain really what they mean by that, because currently internet governance is undertaken through what's called a multi-stakeholder governance structure, which includes private companies, governments, international institutions such as the UN, civil rights organizations, research institutions, etc. What China is hoping to do in its efforts around moving to kind of an internationalization of internet governance as part of its cyber sovereignty strategy is to really move internet governance into an institution like the UN, where there'll be much more influence by governments over how the internet operates. And because China has such great influence around the world amongst many of the countries that are voting members, for example, in the UN, there's a high probability that China would be able to exert more influence over the governance of the internet through an international organization like that. But this is just part of China's cyber sovereignty strategy. What China is really seeking to do here is to establish the technology infrastructure and the discourse around how the internet operates such that it's more compliant with China's vision of the world and less beholden to the United States and the West. China, for example, recognized some time ago that if you set the technology standards in the digital cyber world, you can influence the governance of the internet and exert both significant economic, military, and discourse or persuasive powers around the world. So, for example, economically, if your technologies are the foundation for how countries operate their telecommunications and internet networks, then they will be reliant on you for upgrades, for changes in new technologies that easily interoperate on your core technologies, and they become the basis for further innovations within a technology ecosystem that you control. So economically, if China has control, has set the standards for the internet, it will be better able to deploy its own technologies and its own vision of how the internet should operate. There are also military dimensions of this, because if you control these technologies or if you set these standards, you can have backdoors into country systems and the ability to surveil communications, extract data, and even to choke off technology or internet access. And finally, from a discourse standpoint, if you control the internet technologies, the interfaces and software, you can control what people see, believe, and ultimately act on. So it's a large strategy which revolves around shifting the internet from basically a U.S. dominated U.S.-centric governance model and technology infrastructure to a Chinese-based one.
So, Peter, let me ask you specifically about China's digital Silk Road. And that was launched in 2015, of course, as an offshoot of China's Belt and Road Initiative. And the main goal, I think stated goal, was to improve digital connectivity among participated countries. Hard to get a real accurate number as to how much investment has gone into it, but there was one estimate as of 2018, which was obviously several years ago, of that it was at least $80 billion. So do you think that the Digital Silk Road has been very significant? Has it helped to boost China's global influence in the digital sphere?
The answer to that is yes and yes. So it has been a significant investment on China's part. And yes, it has definitely boosted their influence around the world. You noted that the Digital Silk Road, or DSR is sometimes abbreviated as, is kind of an extension of the Belt and Road Initiative that China launched. And I think another one of your podcasts had a guest that said they had invested as much as $1 trillion or close to $1 trillion in the Belt and Road Initiative. The dollar value of the investment in the DSR is much lower than that, but potentially the impact could be just as great, if not greater. And the reason for this is, going back to kind of my first comments, is that if you can control the technology infrastructure that countries are operating on, it gives you enormous leverage and influence capabilities around the world. But China has two strategies that I think are worth noting here. One is the Made in China 2025 strategy, which is their effort basically to promote their technology firms to the point where they are equal or even better competitors on the world stage than Western technology firms. And frankly, Bonnie, they've been quite successful in this in a number of areas. We look at Huawei, ZTE, Hikvision, a number of these companies are absolute peer competitors and sometimes better technology and service providers than their Western counterparts. So the Digital Silk Road, through government promotion and support and efforts, has helped to promote those. The second initiative is China Standards 2035, which is where China is seeking to set the standards for future technologies in the digital environment. The Digital Silk Road is a mechanism in which to promote both of these efforts. And as we've seen, they've been pretty successful in the 2025 standards, and they're really reaching for 2035.
In your recent report, you wrote about the global rise of Chinese digital platforms. So what are the major Chinese platform actors today? How large is their presence? And what has driven this international expansion?
Yeah. Well, you know, we know many of these platforms. Their names are familiar to us: Alibaba, Tencent, and of course TikTok, which has garnered a lot of attention recently. But there are others, and I'm not quite sure listeners really understand the extent of these platforms as they reach around the world. So, for example, Alibaba operates in 190 territories around the world. And it's not just an e-commerce company. It offers search, music, streaming, and a number of other services, as well as core technology infrastructure for the internet, like cloud computing or content delivery networks. And, you know, one measure we look at, we say, well, Amazon's the largest e-commerce company in the world, but actually Alibaba's gross merchandise value, the value of the merchandise it moves on its platforms just from the e-commerce standpoint, is much larger than Amazon's. Now, Tencent is another big name we know about, operates in 100 countries around the world. Many of us know Tencent by the WeChat app, but few people recognize that Tencent's actually the largest gaming company in the world. They own more game names and have invested in more game names than any other company around the world. They also do e-commerce and music and streaming. TikTok, we all know about. It's more than short videos. It's search engines and e-commerce as well. Now, here's one that that catches a lot of people by surprise. The largest fast fashion retailer in the world by value. Most people would say it's H&M or Zara. It's actually the Chinese firm Shein. And that firm's value at about $100 billion is worth more than the combined value of H&M and Zara. And interestingly, Shein sells no products in China itself. So all of this is international sales. So I'm sorry, I can go on about the number of platforms out there, but they are big and their presence is growing.
So you state again in your report that these Chinese global digital platforms, that the capabilities are more robust than those of competing Western platforms. Maybe you can unpack that a little. What makes them more robust? Why does it matter? And in particular, what makes TikTok more influential?
Here, I think, Bonnie, we need to look at two factors. And the first is the fact that Chinese platforms have grown up in and are an integral part of China's surveillance and control infrastructure domestically. And this means that they are constantly upgrading and updating their capabilities to exert influence domestically on behalf of Beijing's interests. So they have in their business operations, in their technology infrastructure, in their rules of the game, and in their innovation ecosystems, means and methods to really generate influence on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, that's the first component. The second is the intense competitive environment in which these companies operate. They compete viciously against each other as well as against Western companies. And they tap into an innovation ecosystem in China that enables them to identify not just new innovations, but to test those innovations and to scale them rapidly. So, for example, TikTok, as you mentioned, it didn't invent the short video format, but what it did was it perfected the algorithms around short videos so that it became very compelling for users and very hard to disengage. And that is a dopamine response, which we don't need to get into now, but basically Chinese platforms' ability to really innovate and diffuse these technologies in ways that Western platforms are having a hard time catching up to is one of their distinct advantages.
What is the nature of the partnership between the Chinese digital sector and the Chinese government, both domestically and abroad? And how has the growing influence capabilities of these digital platforms been utilized in order to advance China's political interests around the world?
Yeah. So we touched a little bit on that in two dimensions earlier. One is the fact that these technology platforms grew up in China, and they are really in partnership with the Chinese government to maintain the Great Firewall of China and to provide the surveillance and control infrastructure that the Chinese government uses to manage the environment domestically. Secondly, these companies are also part of China's efforts in China, Made in China 2025, and the Chinese Technical Standards 2035. So they are really important to China's growth ambitions in the technology sphere. Now, the question I think you asked was really important is, okay, so they are important to the Chinese government, but are they really exerting influence? And there are a number of examples around the world of where they really are exerting influence on behalf of the CCP, and I'll just mention a few. So, for example, in Australia, WeChat from Tencent censored the Australian Prime Minister's rebuttal to Chinese misinformation carried on the WeChat app. So they basically shut down the Australian Prime Minister's ability to respond to this misinformation. ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, was found to be censoring any negative news about China in its news aggregator app in Indonesia. Alibaba censored its leading influencer in Russian-speaking countries because he was a Ukrainian and mentioned a different version of events that were happening in the war in Ukraine than the version that the Chinese government is promoting and the Russian government is promoting. So there are numerous examples like this, including in Tencent and their gaming activities. So these platforms, I think it's important to note, may not be taking direct instructions from Beijing, but they are designed, and the business practices are designed to respond to Beijing's interests. And so these efforts that I've just cited and many others may be simply their natural response to information that's traded over their platforms that might be perceived as detrimental to China's interests.
I believe that Chinese platforms, although they are growing in terms of their global user share, that they still fall short of the global user share for Western platforms. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's right. And I'm curious whether you think the factors that have enabled Western platforms to secure this advantage in global user share, whether those factors will persist, or whether you think that over time, Chinese platforms are going to narrow the gap and gain a dominant position.
Yeah, and I think you also raised an important point here, and that is against most metrics, Chinese platforms are not yet as preeminent or predominant as Western platforms are. But I think we can take a sobering lesson from TikTok. 5 years ago, very few people even heard of TikTok. And now very few people had heard about Shein 2 years ago, or Temu, which is another e-commerce app which has exploded on the marketplace. And what this has shown us is that Chinese apps have the ability to enter markets and rapidly expand because they have compelling offers or compelling environment for their users to operate in. And this has caused quite a bit of consternation established Western platforms. Facebook has launched an initiative to try with Reels to try to replicate what TikTok has done. Google is now concerned because apparently, according to the latest data I've seen, Gen Z prefers TikTok as its search engine over Google search. So while Western platforms do have an established preeminence right now in the market, I think these Chinese platforms have the capability to displace them. And that, when coupled with their relationship with the underlying technologies that China is building around the world, particularly in emerging economies, gives them distinct advantages over Western platforms, at least in emerging economies.
We probably should mention that there is a push by some in the United States to ban TikTok. India has banned TikTok. I don't think there's any other country that has done so, but perhaps more will going forward. Could you maybe offer what you think are the pros and cons of a country like the United States or any other banning TikTok?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of issues tied up here, including the issue of free speech and the ability for companies or individuals to be able to offer platforms or use platforms to convey versions of free speech. So I think it's a very tricky issue in the United States and in the West. At the same time, Chinese platform technologies offer not just an ability to surveil their users, and we know that TikTok has done that and used that to their advantage, but to also generate influence. And given the influence powers of a platform like TikTok, I think it's very hard for the United States or Europe or Japan or a number of other countries to really tolerate an app that is so directly tied to China and has so much influence capability in the West. So I think we're kind of coming to a point where we're going to need to make some decisions about the origins of these apps and what the potential implications of those origins are. China's already made those decisions, Bonnie, as you know, by essentially excluding Western apps from operating within China. So so I think we're headed to a point where TikTok will need to be sold or held by Western interests or somehow controlled so the data does not go back to China. Otherwise, I suspect some form of ban will take place.
In January of this year, Guo Shuqing, the party secretary of the People's Bank of China, declared an end to more than 2 years of crackdowns on some of China's largest tech companies. How have those crackdowns affected the international expansion of China's digital sector?
Yeah, this was a pivotal moment in China and came as a surprise to many observers because Chinese technology firms were really doing well, not only domestically, but around the world. And I think you know that this was prompted by a speech Jack Ma made criticizing the financial regulators in advance of the IPO for Ant Financial. This crackdown has been pretty dramatic, and it has led to serious fines for many of the largest technology firms in China, a reorganization of the fintech sector in China and how it operates. And it has also led to forced divestitures of interests that these Chinese tech firms have had domestically as well as internationally. So it absolutely bridled, if you will, the ambitions of many of these Chinese tech companies. And you've seen a reshuffling of the leadership of those companies as a result, et cetera. At the same time, two things I would say here. One is that these technology companies are still a vital part of not only China's domestic control and surveillance infrastructure, but also of their innovation ecosystem. So they didn't want to cripple them completely. And they are also an essential part of Chinese efforts to expand its influence elsewhere around the world. So what we have today are companies that are chastened by the crackdown and by the government, potentially more beholden to Beijing and to what Beijing wishes and wants, and therefore more likely to exert influence on Beijing's behalf when they operate globally. That's my own personal observation, but many others have shared that as well.
Well, finally, Peter, I'd like to ask you to look into your crystal ball. I often ask my guests to look into their crystal ball. Hopefully yours is clear. What should we expect to see in the digital space in the coming years? Do you expect some surprising new Chinese policies or approaches that we haven't seen? And what are the signposts that we should look for going forward to assess China's progress in becoming a cyber superpower as Xi Jinping aspires to?
Well, Bonnie, this is another big question, and I will try to answer it as succinctly as possible. I think, you know, in response and looking at first thing I would say is China is building a reputation for being a proactive regulator of the internet. And in a situation where the United States hasn't even passed basic privacy regulations, the EU has with GDPR, China has stepped forward not only with passage of privacy regulations, but with rules around internet, algorithmic controls around generative AI, ChatGPT, et cetera. And this is bolstering China's reputation as being a responsible player around the internet, and basically bolsters China's position and its advocacy for what it calls cyber sovereignty or digital sovereignty and its methods and means for governance of the internet. So this is something I think we need to look at. Unless we can really catch up in a regulatory on the regulatory front with China, even with Europe, I think China stands a chance to really propel its ideas of internet governance forward. Secondly, Beijing is mobilizing an all of China effort around dealing with the fact that it's been cut off from U.S. chip technology, and in this effort, mobilizing the entirety of the country, it's very likely that China will come up with an alternative chip technology and therefore may accelerate the decoupling between the Chinese digital ecosystem and the Western digital ecosystem. And if China is able to decouple in this fashion, given the fact that it has built and maintains much of the internet infrastructure, particularly in emerging economies, you could see a real divergence taking place, and you could see a growing influence of Chinese platforms in these emerging economies operating much more harmoniously with the Chinese tech stack there. So this is the second thing to watch. Watch what happens with the decoupling. Third thing I would say is that generative AI, ChatGPT, is really a revolution that is sweeping the U.S. and Western Europe. And China's playing catch-up on this. And the rules it's put in place may well limit the ability of it to leverage generative AI like ChatGPT in the way that the West can. And this could put some distance between the West and China. But I wouldn't write China off yet. They have a way of turning these situations around. And finally, Bonnie, and I know I'm going long here, but let me just say that we shouldn't ignore, it's not just about watching China. It's also about what are we doing in the West? Are we introducing a regulatory infrastructure that would be respected around the world, that protects privacy, that protects against algorithmic interference in our lives? Are we enabling our technology companies to compete effectively with Chinese technology companies around the world? Currently, they're unable to do so. They can't offer the same price points and the same operability that Chinese companies can. And so I think that there are things that we can do in the West, and not just stand by and watch China, but more proactive things that we can do that really will enable us to continue to sustain an internet infrastructure around the world that is more open and free and conducive to human rights and democratic values that the West espouses.
We've been talking with Peter Raymond, a non-resident senior associate with the economics program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Peter has recently published a report, which you can find at csis.org, and that's entitled Replatform Planet: Implications of the Rise and Spread of Chinese Platform Technologies. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's a pleasure.